And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 665, week 3 fab in the back, in the rear view. We're going to recap that for you guys, talk about some recent news and some other fun stuff as usual, because I have my wonderful buddy on the show. You can find him on Twitter at Mike_Kurland and all of his great work at MLBPlayingTime.com. Mike Kurland, how are we doing, man?
It's still early, right? But I still have time. Like, I can't overreact and tell you how, like, my teams are just doing horribly. And
well, you will overreact. That's what you do. But you shouldn't overreact.
What one thing I've learned is that the season is, in fact, long. But also, last year was the big learning thing was just understanding that if you stick with what you're doing, it should work out in the end, assuming like you're doing the right things. It's just one of those things where slow starts, fast starts. It's not, obviously a fast start you always feel better about because you're hoping your team kind of carry momentum. But realistically, there's players that haven't even got a hit yet this year. Yeah. There's players that haven't even made their debuts yet, like JD Martinez, Lars Nubar, difference-making potential players in deeper formats. So things like that. Obviously not to mention what we have big injuries already taking place. So
crazy injuries, yeah.
So because of that, teams haven't had a chance to truly adapt yet. So like having Strider having a bad start, sure, it's in the ratios and all that, but normally Strider would come back and clean that up and be good, but now they don't have Strider, so now they have to pivot to streaming or finding a guy and hoping that one pops off, whatever. So we haven't seen that adjustment happen yet to teams, the Luis Robert teams. We haven't seen that. So it's one of those things where big time injuries happened. We're gonna see huge dips in production from those teams, most likely, unless they were good enough to make it up off the waiver wire and all that. And so it's one of those things where you can't, if you avoid those injuries, you have to give your team a chance to catch up to those teams while also maybe catching up on, like, I have Bregman on a team. He's batting, like, I think he's batting 100 on the year with like nothing. Yeah. That's not going to hold all year. You know what I mean? So you just have to understand that and be patient, which is something I'm doing better. Like, I'm behind the scenes complaining about things, but it's more so like just a general frustration than an actual concern.
I get it. And it's a great point because, you know, I got some teams doing really well out the gate, which might not matter in the end. I have other teams that are looking rough, like I'm doing fab, and I'm looking at the roster and I'm going, I'm not cutting these guys. Like, these are good players, like you said, just off the slow starts. So it's one of those, you sit back and you kind of hope for the best and realize, you know, these guys, knock on wood, should turn things around and put up some productive seasons. Like you mentioned Bregman, I got a lot of Lindor. He had a good game on Sunday, but that was a rough go out the gate. There's a handful of guys like that. And there's a few other like middle packed guys that you might start looking into moving on from here pretty soon. We'll kind of play that game as we go. But yeah, I'm with you. It's one of those, you know, we keep saying, don't panic, long ways to go, because it is a very long ways. But the injury bug has reared its ugly head, and that has caused some people to get quite aggressive these days.
So. Yeah, it is what it is. I think being aggressive is the right move in terms of like additions, maybe spending your fab early if you really believe in a player. I'm fine with that. You just have to understand that it hamstrings you a little bit throughout the year. If you're I learned my lesson the hard way of running out of fab in September, in August and September, and not running out, but running so low that it hindered my moves, and which in turn lost me my leagues. Or lost me my main event in terms of putting me in second place. But yeah, so being the second year in this stuff, really that experience, you understand like things will not only change now, they start solidifying in July or like, maybe June, July-ish. But then even then, big movement in the second half because other people, you know, big injuries happen and the second half, you know, the call-ups happen or just people just make these changes. And we always talk about the second half surgers. Those guys happen. You know, like last year was Nolan Jones and McCormick. So among others, those are the names I had. So those are the ones that come top of mind. But so those guys are yet to even make a splash. So we'll get there. But I do think players are sharper this year in general. I've noticed the bidding has been more. I don't know if efficient is the word, but at least in my leagues, it's been mostly controlled. A couple like wild card. Like I think I saw Oswaldo Cabrera this week, by the way, in an OC of mine, go for like 140, which made no sense to me. But for the most part, it's like I'm seeing very mild and controlled bids across the board. I'm the one who's actually overbidding my OCs because even though I reined it in from last week, and I still way overbid on a few players, which we'll talk about when we get to that point. But so I'm actually the overbidder in my OCs a little bit and trying to get a better grasp of those because, you know, I don't do those, right? This is my first year really. Second, I did it before, but I didn't really. This is my first year really diving in, understanding it better, and realizing
and multiple OCs, and you're doing the Champions League, so you're trying to really hone it in.
I'm also trying to understand it because I'm realizing I do like OCs. I think they're challenging in a different way, because every team is good now. So every team being good, you have to be that much better at the streaming, that much better at the what you choose off the waiver wire, and you have to be more efficient in your start choices, right? Like that's so there is a difference in difficulty where everybody has a super team, so to speak, compared to 15s. Yep. So I do like that. So I'm actually thinking OTs might become a regular thing for me, but like only like one or two a year because I just don't. I don't want to get too overly.
Welcome invested to them. The dark side. I told you they're so much fun.
They're fun in a different way. Like I don't mind. Like it's frustrating because I'm looking at one of these teams. I'm like, I have a hard time now. This is where it's like cutting people that I see value in, but realizing that they don't have the same value in 12. So it's a really weird,
totally different. Yeah.
But that's why it's like I almost want to stick to 15s, but I do like OCs enough to do like one or two a year, money permitting, depending on, you know, it always depends on what I end up winning or losing at the end of the year, right? But so it's fun. It's definitely a learning curve and different experience.
Well, it's like you said, you have to maximize your starts and sits, and there's a frustrating one for me this past week. There'll be some every week, but I have a lot of MJ Melendez. He started in a couple, sat in a couple. He had like 3 home runs in 4 days. Like he's been crushing it. And so the ones he was sitting in really hurt, but I had like Lourdes Gurriel and Teoscar Hernandez, and you know, you just go down this list of outfielders, like there's no room at the end for you right now, buddy. We're kind of just playing this game. So it's OCs are a different beast, that's for darn sure. Let's talk about a little bit of news and notes from over the weekend. Get your thoughts on these. I know you're putting out your thoughts on your website, or you're tweeting, or you're doing something with them all the time. I just want to see what you're doing here. Shane Bieber, obviously TJ, Gavin Williams will be coming back in a few weeks. Spencer Strider, there's the one. We'll start with him. And we do have a listener question, so I'll intertwine this now.
Before we start, Bubba, I want to apologize now because obviously you probably hear my audio is better. I forgot to, so I turned on my microphone before the show, but I never actually went back into the settings here and put it in. You might actually need to edit for the first time in forever and take out, because I was looking at my camera, which was picking up the audio, and I don't have headphones in today because my kid took them. So you might have an echo for the first 6 minutes that you might want to just get rid of, which sucks because it was decent discussions. But for those listening, if he didn't take it out because the audio was fine, hi, this is usually what you hear, but if he did take it out, I apologize. It's something we'll have to rehash. It was a good conversation, but nothing crazy or essential. So it's a sorry, either way it goes. But I just want to give you a heads up, Bubba. You might need to edit that part out, and now we can move forward.
All righty. Spencer Strider obviously has his UCL injury where the MRI came back showing some damage to his UCL. He's going to get another opinion with a Texas doctor at a later date and time, not specified yet. Could be today for all we know. Could be a week from now. Could be a Matt McClain thing where he goes and has surgery before he gets the third opinion. We never know. But my question for you first, the listener question that we did have on this one was, I believe, from Heath. Yeah, Heath Caps says, did you guys hold or drop Strider anywhere? I couldn't drop him. My only 2 shares were in a Gladiator, so that does not affect me. I don't know what your situation is, if you did or didn't, but like more importantly, would you have dropped him or would you have held this week?
I think this is one of those rare occasions where I probably would have held for a week just to see if we get any other news. I don't think dropping him, depending on who you got, but right now it wasn't like there was a major call up. And if you're, especially in deeper form, now in 12s, I can understand it because there's a lot more to choose from. But even then, there's so much to choose from. You could probably find someone else to drop off your bench to hold Strider for a week, right? So I think regardless, I would have been holding on to Strider. But in 15s, what are you dropping him for? Trevor Williams in his 2 start?
Exactly.
Like maybe you go after Bradford, but how long is he up? Is he going to stay up? You would think he's earned it, but doesn't mean he's guaranteed anything, right? Because Lorenzen. Yeah. Did you go out and get Lorenzen? Did you go stash Shea? Like maybe there was somebody drafted Christian Scott. He was available in one of my mains. He got picked up and stashed. That's the type of thing that you would consider. But even then, are those guys really worth not holding Strider? Cause now you're just stashing you go from one stash to another. And I don't know, best case scenario, what's his face? A Bradish type situation, right?
Best case scenario.
But yeah, I mean, I would want to drop him, but I probably would have done my best to hold him at least 1 week.
Yeah, I would have waited 1 more week to get news for him. He's one of those you can definitely sit and wait on. Again, I didn't have any shares to deal with it, so not a concern. My next question for you. The Braves have not made it official because they have not had to. They used a reliever to fill a spot to get bullpen depth. When it comes to this turn in the rotation, they'll call someone up. Like RotoWire has their projected grid, and they have Dylan Dodd pitching there. We saw him at times last year. lots of guys like AJ Smith-Shawver. That's the popular name that's thrown around, makes kind of the most sense when you really think about it. But there's, and Dylan Dodd's name is not in bold. Let me put it that way. That's just their space holder on their site. And then there's also Bryce Elder, who could be in the mix. I think everyone's leaning Smith-Shawver, Kerwin. What are your thoughts on how this plays out? Because I didn't bid on any of them. None of you weren't even available in my leagues because of the NFBC policy. But how would you approach this? Obviously, you have to wait, but how would you approach it?
They recalled Alan Winans or Winans, whatever his name is.
Yeah, he's a reliever, though.
I thought he was a starter.
They put him in the bullpen.
Did they? Because that was the only thing I saw. I was like, okay, he could kind of plug in because I thought he was a starter. I guess not. I mean, he's 20 years old. Yeah. What do I know? He started 6 games last year, and he started one. He was a starter this year in his one game, 5.2 innings. He was a starter this year in AAA.
In AAA, but yeah, maybe they'll keep him there. I'd be shocked if
they. I'm not saying he's the guy, but they called him up, and he was acting as a starter for them in the minors. So Winans is the guy. I plugged him in as the fifth guy because that's who they called up right away.
Yeah.
So I mean, like you said, it doesn't guarantee anything. If you look at his career. Last year, 6-for-6 starts at the major league level. The year in AAA, 17 of 23 appearances were starts. So Winans isn't necessarily a bullpen arm. Now, is he anything special? No. But a 3.18 ERA and his one start in minors, 2.85 ERA. And I know ERA isn't a great indicator of anything, but maybe they are just going to let him go and run with the Elder wasn't a big strikeout guy. And I think if they can get anything decent out of Winans, maybe they'll just let him run with it for a little bit. But I know AJ Smith-Shawver had like a rough first outing or two down in the minors already.
Yeah.
I thought Elder, I honestly thought it was gonna be Elder's the next guy up or Dodd because those guys, the Braves always seem to go depth, like those guys, like the safer guys that they just know. But Winans being called up, I don't think it's nothing just because he has a history of being a starter for this team in the majors and minors.
Okay. I'm looking right now. Yeah, he was not even added in any of the OCs. So you might not have pitched yet, actually.
I don't think he's worth adding.
Yeah. That's kind of where I was going with that. Like, so Winans is the guy. Okay, so Winans not worth adding. If a Smith-Shawver or an Elder came up, would you add them?
Yes, I think it was Smith-Shawver. I mean, and we saw Smith-Shawver get added where he was available because I know he was drafted in some spots and didn't he have like a decent spring too?
Yeah, so, people thought he was going to make the team. Like, he was added in 9 OCs, as high as $51, as low as 2, because that's probably the only 9 he was available in.
Yeah, and he was available in a few. I know he was, like I said, I saw Vlad had him on, like, multiple main events. But, it was one of those things where Smith-Shawver is, like, the guy we're dreaming on, but he's the one who he hasn't shown us any success at upper minors or at the major league level yet. I mean, he's shown the strikeout abilities, but the walks have been an issue, and the walks are an issue. So, again, very small sample this year, but the walks were an issue last year when he came up, almost 4 per 9, 5.7 per 9 in AAA last year. So Smith-Shawver, although has the best stuff and the best potential, I don't know if he's the one if he's the one ready. And that's where, and like we just mentioned three other names, including, as gross as it sounds, the Winans. I think it's how you say his Winans, Alan Winans.
I think it's Winans too. It could be totally wrong. But yeah.
He's not the sexy name, but he is the guy he's the guy they called up. And I know, like, I don't know who plugged him into the bullpen or why, but he hasn't been treated as a reliever last 2 years. So I don't know why he would suddenly be a reliever.
Yeah, maybe I misread it. I'll say that.
Well, I think it's just one of those things that people just look at the name and think, oh, this guy is just going to be their bullpen. But
I just assumed if they called a guy up right away, they want a bullpen death. It's the old move. And then when you need the starter, you call the starter up type thing. That's the logistical move, but maybe they didn't.
Maybe that's still the case. When is Strider's next start or when would it be?
I got it right here. It's on Wednesday.
I don't know. You're right though. Normally it's like, hey, let's call this guy up and we're setting him down. We're going to activate this guy.
Exactly.
I wonder, that's
what I'm seeing.
And I do wonder who lines up with him in the minors. Like if we go look at the minor league depth chart and like who's lining up with him, that would be the best case to get the call. Like, okay, well, this guy lined up with him. He'd be the most available or maybe they had an extra off day. So it's one of these two guys and it might be Dodd or Elder, but I think it's funny. Cause I don't think Winans is necessarily not the guy. And again, not advocating to go get him. Just
guess who's next in line. It would be, I believe, because the 10th is Wednesday. Now, that would be Smith-Shawver's last start was on the 5th.
Well, there you go. So it would be.
I just looked at it. He threw on the 5th. Let's just look at the others just for fun to see. Dylan Dodd, because Fangraphs actually has minor league stuff. Dodd threw on the fifth also, though. So that's
probably where they're getting Dodd from then, because yeah. It goes back to the Stravers having such a rough start. I know he looked better in spring and all that, but I don't know. Yeah. And that's why, and Dodd makes sense too. But again, they called up the guy. And when they call up a guy that has only been starting the last 2 years for this team, it kind of triggers the idea that maybe he's going to get the spot start. And I don't think it's a set spot anyway. I think if he sucks, they would send him down.
Other thing is Winans is much older. He's 28. The other guys are young bucks.
Dodd's having a good start he's having a good start through two games already.
Yeah, Winans threw on the second, and then he has not made an appearance this year with the big club.
That's why it's weird. I don't know.
Dodd and Shaver both line up, so we'll see. We'll see.
I know we spent more time than we should, but I just think it's funny that like you see the bids go for these guys, and I think
that's why I wanted to bring it up.
It's a little bit. I think there's some wish casting there, and don't get me wrong. I think betting on the best talent is always the way to go in these situations, because you always think cream rises to the top. But I don't know. I have Smith Shaver on some DC, so I would take it, but I'm just not as confident. I actually have Winans on one DC. So I was surprised when I saw that, but he was a 50th round pick. So if he gets a spot starter too for Atlanta, he might be useful for a week or two.
I want to hit on this tweet by the guilds that made me laugh, because I've been kind of anti spending all your money on Victor Scott. And am I glad he's stunk this bad? No. But it's like you can see the writing on the wall. I know you're a Newbar guy. We kind of all have been discussing behind the scenes. But the guilds tweets this out, and Newbar's supposed to be back on Monday. We're recording Monday morning. He says, Victor Scott is still 100% owned in the main. Thought there would be a couple rage drops. He's facing six right-handed pitchers on the schedule. This is it. And my theory is he might not even see six right-handed pitchers if he's the casualty to Newbar. So, to his point, are you surprised no one has dropped him in the main yet?
I think people – no, I'm not surprised, because I think people – are like you spent a lot of people spent solid coin on them. Don't get me wrong, but it's the people I'm surprised. I guess I am, because not everyone, you know, people drafted them because of late drafts and whatnot, or the first week waiver wire fab additions. He was very cheap, if at all added, right? So I'm kind of surprised, because not everybody was as equally as invested, but there were people there, you know, 150 plus. That's like 15. They were spending 15% of their fab on them, expecting to be a difference maker at least in one category. And
he's 90% in OCs right now.
And well, see, I'm really surprised about OCs, because I mean, again, I get people get attached to the price. And I do think as long as he's up, you got to at least give him a little bit of a shot in 15s, 12s. I'd be more willing to turn and burn, because I don't know if the talent was special enough to really be a difference maker in 12s anyway. I understand the stolen bases and all that, but Bryce Terang was available in 12s. I'm trying to think, there's other guys that are stealing bases maybe that don't have quite the stolen base ceiling as he had, that Victor Scott had in theory, but guys that stole enough while not being a zero elsewhere off the waiver wire in OC. So I'm surprised OCs he wasn't dropped more, but in 15s, I guess I'm surprised he's 100% rostered. But at the same time, I think when you have a guy that has that type of, or what you could have done, if you want to be like, you know what, I don't believe in this guy, I'm going to drop him and let others, someone else would have, somebody even this week probably would have spent 80 plus on him in a main event. If you want to just get rid of some fab, that's exactly. One way to do it too. So it's like there is weird strategies like that. You can drop a player that you don't necessarily believe in that you got for cheap or got for just took a chance on. And so, but I don't think anyone does that, because if it backfires, it makes you look way worse. but I don't know. Just, yeah, I wasn't really a believer anyway. Yeah. I don't have a lot of shares. Do I think he's this bad? No, but
exactly. I agree.
I think the team knows better than we do. Right. We always say that, but yet we always think we know better. And we all say sure broke camp, and then when he didn't, maybe there was a reason. And then now he's not having a good start. So yeah. maybe he gets sent. I don't know if he gets sent down today, because they still don't have a whole lot of depth. Well,
they still haven't technically activated Newbar yet. Like they said he's gonna be back. He should be back Monday or Tuesday at the latest. So we'll see.
Why Tuesday? He's fine. Get him.
I know he's fine. He should. I'd be shocked if he's not activated on Monday. Just throwing it out there. Just
today.
That was the lyrics as it came out when they said it on Sunday. So
listen, man, give me my Newbar back. I need him.
Hey, he was available. 1OC. When we recap fab, I didn't even go look and see how much he went for, because my bid did not win him, and I thought I was decently aggressive, but I'm also weak in those type of things. Let's talk about Trevor Story. We talked about potentially dropping Strider. I dropped Trevor Story. Pretty sure you dropped Trevor Story where we had him. So there's that question: would you or wouldn't you? But at the same time, David Hamilton got called up, home run on Sunday. Dude hit 17 homers and stole 57 bags at AAA last year in 103 games. He stole 70 bags at AA the year before. This Fab's going to be fun on Sunday.
It's weird because the power is kind of sneaky. Like, it's not really a strength of his, but he's not a zero, right? Yep. He's going to bat probably towards the bottom of the lineup, but he walks. The thing is, he walks a ton, so the on-base ability is there. And with the on-base skill, if he has the on-base skills with that speed, the stolen bases should come. You would think, in theory. He hasn't stolen a base yet this year, granted, six games total between the minors and majors, but still a surprise considering just how much he runs, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, he could be everything you wanted Victor Scott to be in terms of like that's kind of like maybe the batting average won't be what you, because you expected Scott to give you a better batting average, right? But Hamilton should play every day against righties. So I do think he's a platoon bat with some speed upside. And so he's not going to be a zero for batting average, and he's not going to be zero for power. So he's going to be usable, especially at MI, especially if you lost Story. But you have to understand he's still a platoon bat. And we'll talk about other players later, like Oliver Dunn, which very, very toolsy, fun player, still has strikeout concerns and still in a platoon. So you have to keep these things in mind. And I think that's why we're getting smarter as bidders, because we're not going nuts over these guys that are flashing the pans right now. Whereas I feel like in years past, like the fact that some of these guys are going for as cheap as they are on average kind of surprises me, just because we've seen far more reactionary bids as recent as last year on guys that are very similar in performance. So maybe I'm just thinking about how last year every week was a call up. Maybe that's where my brain is. Every week was a call up last year.
And that's what it felt like. And it's almost like we got the Victor Scott one first week. We got David Hamilton this week. I'm like, are we doing this again? Is it happening again? I hope not. But I've never been a big bidder on these. Hamilton intrigues me, though. I could have really used him this week on those
three leagues. Yeah, but the problem is he intrigues me for $20 roughly. You know what I mean? Not for 40 or 50 that he might go for.
He's going to go for much more than that.
Especially if he steals a base or two and hits another home run this week, he's going to you'll see David Hamilton go for 50 plus. And I know that he has a long run on the position at this point now. Probably there's a potential for the rest of the year. But I don't know. And that plays a part in why the cost will be there. I just don't know if I'll pay that, because I hate paying that much for a platoon bat. But at the same time, right now, platooning is pretty much all you'll get off the waiver wire, minus the call-ups that might get regular playing time.
Yep.
But and also, if they can give you good per-plate appearance numbers, you kind of take that and run with it in deeper formats, obviously. I'm referencing 15-teamers more than 12s.
Yep, I'm with you on that. Lou Bob, hip flexor strain, grade 2, going to be out for, looks like, at least 3 to 4 months. He had actually worse injury, missed half the season or longer a few years back, didn't have surgery, and we're back at it again. Were you dropping Lou Bob this week?
Well, I guess we should have. We both kind of glanced over how we both dropped a Story. I dropped him in an OC. I don't know if I would have done it in a main yet. I saw him drop in one of my mains. I saw Lou Bob dropped in one of my mains. If I had Lou Bob, and did we get – so was it – is 3 to 4 months the official timeline? Because I saw 2 months floated out there. I saw 6 weeks floated out there. But it's a grade – I also know grade 2 strains usually offer like 8 to 10 weeks minimum type of thing.
Yeah, it's going to be at least half a season, I'd imagine.
But
I think it's a few – it's like probably at least 8 weeks before he can really get going, and he's got to ramp back up again. So I'm thinking more 3 to 4 months.
And it's a hip, so does it throw his mechanics out of whack? How did he do it? I'd have to go back. Do you remember which year it was the –
I think it was 19, I think. I could be wrong. And 19 or 21. I'll look it up as you're talking.
Well, because I'm looking at like in 20. Oh, he only started. It might have been 21 then, because 21 he only played 68 games. 2020 was a shortened season. So and 19 he wasn't up yet. So we'll say 21. He came back and hit well. So it wasn't one of those things where it hindered him, which is good to see, because if it's a similar injury. It was 21.
It was 21. How did he run that year?
He had 6 stolen bases, 6 for 7 night. But and 13 home runs, hit .338 with a .394 BABIP. So the BABIP wasn't an issue. Like, the speed wasn't an issue, which is nice. So it's one of those things where, like, if he came back that year and completely, like, fell off, then you can be a little – then you'd be more concerned. But even then, he came back from that injury and only played 68 games. Are we going to have – like, can you really hold out a guy for – you're hoping for 80, 90 games? I think he's droppable, but if you're lucky in one of those teams that ran real pure, and this was like your only injury and you had no other stashes, I have no problem holding on to him for a little bit, see if there's any updates, some encouraging news. But realistically, like 9 times out of 10, I'm probably dropping Robert in an NFBC format. I want to emphasize NFBC because if you don't play NFBC, obviously you don't have this problem. Yes. NFBC formats, yeah, I get why you drop them. Heck, I tried dropping, and you know me, I don't want to drop Young at all, Josh Young. I didn't want to drop him. Yeah, but I was like, I found a way, I found a reason to, and I still couldn't. So that's another discussion. But yeah, so, and Young is not even, and Young, although Young isn't the player Robert is, Young, it's my thing was, is Young is still a very solid player that will get added if I drop him most likely by a team with less injuries than I have, mm-hmm. but also a guy that will come back and contribute far sooner. So it goes to show you that, like, although it's hard, I'm not saying player X and player Y are the same, but it's more so like, hey, look, a very usable contributing player in a deeper format due back in 6 to 8 weeks. At this point, it'd be 5 to 7 weeks or so, roughly, give or take. It's one of those things where I'm just like, even he's droppable is what I'm getting at. So if he's droppable, and even though the guy's better, we're talking about injury, it's going to linger a lot longer in a format where you don't have IL spots. So yeah, Robert, I guess, would be a drop. It's just hard because I'm not in that position. And I know how I am about stashing. I need to be better about cutting bait. But I don't know. I think I'd still cut with him. I cut Story, so it kind of tells you, yeah, I'm cutting guys if they're that long.
Yeah, and especially in 12 teams. Like, I'm just saying, you know what? If you're missing, basically, if you're in the month and a half to 2 months or more situation, we're probably piecing out, which is kind of how it's going to work.
Unless you're a true difference maker, I don't hold you for more than
that's 6 months. That's why when they said Josh Young had his setback, I'm out. I'll see you later. Because plus wrist injuries are tricky. There's a couple other minor injuries here and there, but like JD's not coming back to maybe next weekend, which is
what the heck, bonkers. Man?
Just keeps getting pushed back. You mentioned Michael Lorenzen's gonna have one more rehab start, which means Cody Bradford gets at least one more start. You did hit on it, so I'll bring it up. It's like, whose spot does Bradford keep when Lorenzen comes back? Because you got a Rangers rotation that, albeit it's got its hiccups, like you got Heaney, who, as much as we make fun of him, he's not losing his spot in the rotation. You got Eovaldi, you got John Gray. Does Dane Dunning get the axe to keep Cody Bradford? Like, it's an interesting, I guess, I don't know if dilemma is the right word.
Yeah, and Dunning has options too, which is important because the rest of the guys don't have options. And Dunning isn't exactly starting off strong either. So Dunning could be the odd man out. I mean, I think we all assume Dunning's just solid there, but we could see Dunning go down easier. I don't think Texas expected Bradford to pitch this well, right? I don't think any of us did. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been available to be added this week after another good start. But he's a guy that he's going to get Oakland, and there's no reason why he shouldn't hit well, pitch well against Oakland. But that doesn't mean Oakland doesn't have those occasions where I think yesterday was one of those.
Jack Flaherty.
Yeah. Flaherty was like, no one thought Flaherty would be the guy that gets, I mean, I shouldn't say that. No one expects Oakland to be the team to light you up, right? So I don't think that's going to happen. I think Bradford's going to cruise, but I do think there's a chance that Bradford sticks and it's Dunning that goes down. Just looking at the numbers and looking at the options and all that, there's no reason why they don't keep Bradford up. If you don't mess with that, you know what I mean? Like, he's running good right now. You let that go.
Yeah, that's kind of why I wanted to bring it up. It makes it quite interesting when all things are said and done. All right, let's talk some fab for the week here. Again, for those that might be new to the show, we usually talk 12-team OCs, add drops, and whatnot. Mike likes to throw his 15-team comments in there, which is very helpful to kind of differentiate between the two. After we talk about a handful of players, we'll recap our add drops for the week, and there's going to be some fun discussion there, let's put it that way. And it'll probably get intertwined in here. So let's start with the most added player this week, Ronel Blanco, who was trying to throw back-to-back no-hitters on Sunday night, which was probably upping the bids a bit as well. Adding in 185 leagues, as high as 420, as low as 7. I just have my concerns. Yes, Blanco's been outstanding, so maybe I'm overthinking this. But Verlander's coming back in like a week. Like, he's supposed to be back in like the following week. And Blanco's spot seemed to make the most sense. Now some smart people have said maybe it's JP France that goes away. I get that as well. How would you have approached Ronel Blanco this week? Because I did not have enough stones to put up the money he was going for.
And that's where I'm at. I mean, if you missed out on, and honestly, he just pitched his best two-start week of the year. Most likely, right?
Like, that's what it feels like.
Like, this was the week to have. And don't get me wrong, just like Bradford, I don't think he gets sent down. You don't stop a guy with this momentum. You just don't. I don't think a team's going to do that. I think JP, I agree with these guys. I've heard people mention this too. And I at first I was like, I didn't agree, but then Blanco, but I also expected Blanco to not continue where he left off and literally pitch a no hitter through six or whatever it was until, or five, until he got hit in the sixth. And even then it was one hitter. He got one hit on six innings and that was the game. Now he's going to be figured out. And maybe that's at that point is when he gets sent down or relegated to a multi-inning role in the bullpen. But until then, I think this team puts France down, lets France do his thing in the minors. Verlander comes up, or maybe they go, I feel like these teams can easily go six man and let their guys get into the rotation a little bit more and build up a little bit. But I know Verlander is kind of old school. Like, I don't think he wants to be messed with the six man. I think Verlander's like, I think this team just does five man. But I was just thinking outside the, you try to think outside the box, a way to make all these guys fit, and it makes sense to everyone because of innings and all that these days. But I do, if I had to pick, I'm guessing France is the one who gets the axe. Another guy, he also has options. And he was, I think France was like the fifth, and it was always a competition entering spring before the GM or the coach, I think it was Dana Brown, came out and just straight up said, no, this is our rotation. And France was the five, but things change. Ronald Blanco is doing these things that don't make sense to me, but they're working. And he just throws a changeup a lot, I guess. But it's impressive. And it's almost like it's a 30-year-old rookie. Like, how do you not root for that guy? Right. Could you imagine if he won Rookie of the Year?
Well, that's the crazy part, because people say, oh, these Japanese and Korean players are so old, they shouldn't qualify. Well, Renel Blanco's 30, or Renel, I probably say it wrong, but it's a good point you make. But the bigger point is, these might have most likely been his best two starts of the entire season.
Gotta be.
So, like, if he does this all year, he's going to win the Cy Young through the Rookie of the Year. That's pretty awesome. But I can't do it.
You root for this. You absolutely root for the story. 100%. I don't root for him because I don't have
Disney made a movie about something similar to this. Yes.
Yeah. What's his face? Oh, the Dennis Quaid played him.
Quaid, yeah.
But we're talking about a guy with 11.2% strikeout rate or swing strike rate. Excuse me. That's about league average. The O swing is way below average. He's not getting chases. Blanco's not his. I'm trying to look up some of his other metrics real quick. Just one of those things where he's not going to perform this well.
No, it's been great. Good matchups. He pitched well. But
weren't they bad matchups? He no hit the Astros, right? Or no, he is the Astros. He no hit
the Jays.
Who was it? I know the Jays were tough. It was a tough two step, and he overperformed. It was the Jays. You no hit the Jays, and then who was yesterday?
Yesterday was the Rangers.
Yeah, that's what it was. I remember because he's the Astros, and Astros are in my head. So think about that two-step. I'm surprised people started him, and people drafted him and started him.
Yeah, good. Like, I sat Garrett Crochet because he's facing the Braves in his first start, and yeah. I hate it. I hate it now.
Yeah,
but I don't regret the move.
No,
move.
That's the right process because, this week, Louis Varland's two-start. As much as I love Varland, it's the Dodgers and then Detroit. I don't think the Detroit start is going to be good enough for the Dodger to start. Nope. So I'm going to sit him. And now if he goes out and does well for two starts, good on him. That's not happening on my teams because I don't trust the LA start. So I think that's good process. Just his poor results because something beyond your no one expected him to come out and be this consistently good. And Crochet is going to run out of gas eventually. But anyway, back to Blanco. Yeah, I think Blanco's safe. But I'm with you. I don't think you're not getting that production anymore. Right? You can't get past production when you get these guys. So you have to remember that regression monster's coming for him. And all the indicators are like a mid-4 ERA guy. And if he's a mid-4 ERA guy starting at a zero after two starts, those could be a couple blow-up starts, assuming that, again, now the xERA is 0.9. So it's like even the underlying metrics are very all over the place for Blanco. But there's no real strikeout upside right now. There's decent ratios and obviously win potential on that team, but I'm not chasing it, not for the prices he was going for. And kudos to those who started him. Amazing. Better than Ober, Fried, Nola, just like we thought.
Yep. Just like we drew it up preseason. One of the more popular two-step streams for the week was Spencer Turnbull, added in 167 leagues for as high as 134, as low as a dollar. 134 is an interesting call on people. He did throw five innings, no earned runs, seven Ks against the Cincinnati Reds in his debut this season for the Phillies. And his two-step consists of a pretty darn nice one. When you look at the Cardinals versus the Pittsburgh Pirates, how much were you in on the Spencer Turnbull? And are we believing that this might be closer to the guy we saw a few years back when he was, tearing it up for the Tigers?
I remember poo-pooing him all offseason because I was like, oh, he's not going to – first off, he didn't have a rotation spot, right? So I wasn't even in on him because of that until we had Taiwan Walker go down. And then he comes out, throws a new sweeper, looks like a lot better. And I'm thinking to myself, man, he must have really just hated Detroit, right? Like, we know there was a lot of turmoil there. I don't even think he was really hurt all the time that he was hurt last year, you know? But Turnbull in mains, he went as high as 135 and as low as 46. And the two step, I mean, if you could have got him around there in 15s, that's great because the two step, but it's one of those things where I still view him more in the, like, he's entering that bench streamer. He's entering that bench streamer conversation where you want him there for that reason. Like, he's solid, safe. I mean, not solid, safe. You don't know if he's safe yet, but there's some upside there. Turnbull can also give you, like, this because a decent two step. I think I got him in OC. Well, when we go over that, I think I got one share for a good price. But yeah, he's a guy that we obviously need to see more, but you got to be encouraged. A guy, Turnbull's shown that potential in the past. And right now, you just need anybody who shows potential in these pitching streets, right? That's what we're doing. Give me upside, please.
Yes, that was the biggest thing, because overall it was a rough week to string two steps. Most of them were either really good pitchers that you already rostered, or it was just an overall ugly scenario out in those streets. We'll skip Cody Bradford because we already hit on him pretty good earlier. He was added in 144 leagues, as high as 222. Graham Ashcraft added in 115 leagues, as high as 135, as low as a dollar. You know, there was a lot of hope for him last year, then it just got rough and ugly at most times. Six innings, two earned, five Ks in his debut at Philadelphia. When it comes to Ashcraft, and this week he's got matchups against Milwaukee at home in Great American Small Park, and then at the Chicago White Sox. So not the worst of scenarios, given Milwaukee's bats are pretty hot these days. But there's the discussion that Ashcraft, you know, he's doing, he's moved over on the rubber. He's doing all these things to adjust things. I'm still nervous as I'll get up with this. Like, this Milwaukee start is terrifying to me. So what are your thoughts on Graham Ashcraft?
So the reason why the Milwaukee start is kind of terrifying is, well, I mean, it's not fair. It's only one start, but the ground ball rate was way down. And I know Ashcraft kind of tinkered with his pitch mix as well this offseason. I think he's like more of a three pitch, like, again, one start. So I don't want to say this is who he is now, right? But Ashcraft, the thing is last year he did this, right? He like started off the year, did really well, and then fell off a cliff. And he might just be doing that again. I mean, we're seeing, so this year so far, in his first start, he threw three pitches at least 30% of the time. Last year, it was a two-pitch mix with his third pitch being a sinker at 9.6% of the time. So already you see him tinkering there. You mentioned Ashcraft moving over on the rubber a little bit. So you have reasons for optimism. Like, okay, cool, he found success with this new approach. Maybe it's enough to keep hitters off for a couple more starts. And with one of these starts being the White Sox, who are without Eloy, without Robert, I went out and targeted Ashcraft for his two start as well. So I'm riding it in my OCs. In mains, he went in 26 leagues for as high as 81, as low as 12. So 15 teamers. He's definitely somebody you want there more. Same with Turnbull, but both these guys, I think, have usable weeks in them, and both of them have potential to be more than just streamers. That's why even in 12s, I think both these guys were guys that you probably should have just gone out to try to get, even if it's for a few bucks and see if you land them. Like you mentioned, these guys go for next to nothing in some leagues because not every league is as in or as neat as into it, or just OCs are the Wild West. We say it over and over again. You'll hear it every week when we mention OCs.
Curlin's experiencing it firsthand this year.
And I'm part of the Wild West. I'm overbidding. But and
what makes the Wild West is there's no consistency. Well, and that's the part I love. That's why I love doing this, is literally there's a range of 144 to 1. Like, when we talk about Blaze Alexander, that's going to be the fun name. Like, it's all over the board in every league I was in. So, like, we'll get to that soon. But I do want to hit up Alex Kirilloff here as our first positional player to discuss. 102 leagues, as high as 157, as low as a dollar. I love what Kirilloff's doing. I was bidding on him in leagues where he was available. He's hit safely in all seven games this year. Three triples, two doubles, no homers just yet. But he's hitting 385. And one thing I really love to see, a 10% strikeout rate over that time frame. Obviously, the BABIP of 417 is not going to cut it, but 12.5% barrel, nearly 42% hard hit. Like, he's doing the things. Kirilloff's always been able to hit when he's healthy. That's the thing. The power, I think there's still power there, maybe not with the wrist injuries he's had so much, but just average-wise, top of that order, he's hitting second primarily. Like, to me, there was a lot to like with Kirilloff. What are your thoughts on what Alex Kirilloff's doing so far?
I still don't care about him. And it's for the fact that I do think he's going to be platooning. I need to double check his splits. I think they've faced a ton of righties. Like last week alone, they had like five or six of their games were against righties. But here's his problem. So Kirilloff, the hit tool has always been a strength of his going back to as a prospect. But he hits the ball into the ground a ton. I think it's still 50% this year, like right now already. But also, so part of his career problem is like even when he elevates the ball, it's always been an opposite field thing. And this is something that Ryan Venancio pointed out to me a year or two ago about him. Because I was like, oh, why aren't you in on him? And he's like, the dude just doesn't ever pull the ball in the air. And I was like, oh, so the power never plays up because you can have a great hit tool and Kirilloff has that. Kirilloff has the hit tool. He has the ability to get on base because of it, but the power, he doesn't run. And then the power just always underperforms because of his approach. And so far this year, it's the same approach. It's still.
Can I stop you real quick? Just one question. I'll let you go.
Yeah.
So you mean the Ryan Venancio that preaches Ellie De La Cruz so highly, who had a 54% ground ball rate last year and has a 60% ground ball rate this year. Hey. That same Ryan Venancio?
Hey, but Ryan is consistent about one thing. He hits, if they hit the crap out of the ball, he loves them. And okay. But yeah, no, but that's not fair. You can't sit there. Now I'm going to flip this. Are you comping Alex Kirilloff?
I'm comping if you're going to compare. The reason you don't like him is because he hits the ball on the ground too much, which was a big preface of that statement. Well, so does Ellie De La Cruz.
Well, I don't, I hate ground ball. Oh, we'll talk about Blaze Alexander. Reason why I'm like optimistic but pessimistic. And a lot of the pessimism comes from the ground ball rate. But I think even Ryan, I can't speak for him, but I'm going to try here because if he's listening, I think Ryan would tell you that he admits that that's a problem, but he also knows that Ellie brings those, like, it's one of those things where Ellie can hit ground balls all year, but the 30 balls he puts in the air are all going to go over the fence. You know what I mean? That's the big difference. Like when Ellie puts the ball in the air, it's going to fly.
That's fair.
And Ellie also steals a bunch of bags. So it's one of those things where Ellie can suck in real life and still be a fantasy contributor. Alex Kirilloff can't suck in real life and be a fantasy contributor. So it's beyond the 50% ground ball rate. Kirilloff's pull ground ball rate is already at 71%. And again, small samples, I know, but we're working with what we work with here. And I think his career is like 60-something%. I'm looking it up right now. Kirilloff's career pulled ground ball rate is 63%. Look at that. It's like I know these things, right? It's like I have the fact that I memorize these, but I can't remember to pick up my kid from school sometimes.
Yeah, you don't know what your anniversary is, but you got that figured out. Congratulations.
But yes, so Kirilloff's problem, the reason why the power doesn't quite play up for him as well is because he doesn't have that difference making power and he's putting it to the opposite field or center field. Whereas you need that guy, you need him to, if he was pulling it, and it's annoying because he has the hit tool. Kirilloff has the hit tool to turn that. Like if he gave a little bit of batting average away, hit closer to 250, he could pull 25, 30. He could be Max Kepler. He could be that guy where he's hitting 250, 260 with 25 home runs plus. And you would take that. You would love that. But I just don't know if it's coming because health, not to mention the fact that it's the approach. It always aggravates me. So we'll see. But that's the only reason why it's an approach thing with Kirilloff. But in terms of like, if you're targeting like in 15s, if you're targeting plate appearances, he's got them. He's batting at the top of the order, like you mentioned, against righties. But other than targeting plate appearances, you have to just be mindful they could be empty because the power won't play up as much given the approach.
Hey, Luis Urias is cool.
Yeah, Luis Urias has an elite batting average, though.
Kidding. All right, Jose Caballero added in 92 leagues, as high as 176, as low as a dollar. They love the glove in Tampa Bay, and it's been a great start to the season. He's hit safely in all but one game so far, hitting 296. He stole four bags, so he's getting the job done. He's going to play pretty much every day. The power, he's going to maybe hit you 10-ish home runs, give or take, but he'll run for days. And if he hits at the bottom of the order, he can flip around and score some runs. What are your thoughts on Caballero, especially a week when we're looking for a few injured shortstops out there, so some replacements were needed?
Absolutely. He's probably a cheaper version. I saw Terrain go for a crazy money week one or week two, whatever it was, in OCs. And I think Caballero is kind of like that type of player, but safer floor. I think the batting average – maybe not. They both kind of are slap hitting types, you know, like not really. I just remember Caballero having, or maybe it was Terang. They both had like, I think Terang had that. Oh, they're both really good Z contact guys. I know right now I'm looking at Caballero's profile. Yeah, he's always been a high zone contact guy. The swing strike rate, 20%. I don't buy that because that's never really been a problem of his. Although I do know Caballero has, I think he's pressing now, but I do know that part of the thing was let's elevate the ball to the pull side more for him in the offseason. That hasn't quite translated just yet. But at the end of the day, I think the hit tool is good enough to keep him on getting on base. Caballero can hit for a decent average and steal bases. And if nothing else, you're getting batting average and stolen bases. And that has uses in certain formats, and the playing time is there. So, yeah, Caballero. Not flashy, but he'll help you where you need him.
Very, very, yeah. He's serviceable is the best way I'll say it.
Right now, beggars can't be choosers, right?
No, I'm a fan. I want to ask you about this guy, because I actually put a few bids in this week. Not sure if I got him. I'll have to double check. But Charlie Blackmon was added at 90 leagues, as high as $96, as low as a buck. And, you know, in draft season, I'll be guilty as charged. I just wrote Blackmon off. Didn't want to draft the guy. Why would I draft a 37-year-old on his swan song? Well, it's early in the season, I'll admit it, but he's hit safely in six of nine games. 306 average, four extra base hits, one stolen base even. He's only striking out 5.3% of the time, leading off every day for the Colorado Rockies. So, like, the leading off factor, playing every day, and he's hitting for now because he's healthy for now. Like, I was all, okay, there's worse things to do with a couple bucks than add Charlie Blackmon.
Yeah, and I have him in DCs, and that was the only place I was getting him, so I don't have him anywhere here. He's, like you mentioned, there's no platoon there. And I think initially, because we saw Blackmon platoon a lot last year, he towards the end of the year especially, and now he's not only platooning, but he's playing every day, and he's even leading off against lefties as well. It's almost like the old school, hey, we're just going to have our leadoff hitter be our leadoff hitter. And the thing is Blackman's producing, so they're not going to pull him out of that. Now, the power won't be what we have seen in the past. The fact he stole a base already, kind of interesting, but wouldn't expect a whole lot of those. But at the end of the day, leading off, gets half his games as cores. Batting average will always be, even last year, 279, 264 was lowest in the last three seasons. Like, I think you're still getting a solid, he's better as a fifth outfielder and a 15. So in 12s, he's more of like you're streaming him while he's at home, but then you could drop him again. You shouldn't be blowing the bank on this type of guy. But people see cores, people see black. His name still might have a little value for people. But I'm not overly excited outside of streaming contexts in 15 teamers.
Yep, that's fair. Totally fair. A couple more names I want to hit on before we talk about our pickups of the week. Brady Singer added in 89 leagues, as high as 249, as low as $11. Like, I got made fun of all draft season for my love for a late round Brady Singer, especially in DCs. He's made two starts, 13 and a third innings total, one total earned run, 14 Ks. He's only struck out four White Sox after striking out 10 Twins, so that's not the most ideal, but you know, 0.68 ERA is not sustainable, but I see a 2.41 xFIP, and I'm like, that's still pretty good. If that, like, you know, small samples, I'm not oblivious to this, but I'll take that. So I know I have my biases because I like Singer. Do I think he'd be this good? No, but he has made a few adjustments that people said he needed to make. So what are your thoughts when you look at Brady Singer?
I think we talked about him last week on the show, which is great because, you know, he continued the success. I have three DC shares, so it was one of those guys where I think I pivoted to him to DL Hall, and that's kind of going to end up being a regret probably. Because, I mean, I think Hall still has some – I think he has better days ahead of him. I think he's going to get better as the season goes on.
Much worse.
Well, he hasn't been that awful. Go look at the numbers. They're not great, but like they're not what they – listen, they're not Brady Singer, okay? It doesn't matter.
Brady Singer, that's for darn sure.
But – you mentioned, and last week we talked about the fastball usage, and it's still, you know, it's still being utilized as a third pitch, and he's getting success with it early on. Now, how much of that is actually because he's facing the players he's facing? But people like to talk about ex-woba and ex-slug on pitches and fastballs in particular. I've seen that talk. So you look at those, and 222 ex-slug, 178 ex-woba. These are really good numbers on the four-seamer of all things. He throws it almost primarily to lefties, so it gives him an offering against lefties. The sinker mostly against righties, but still throws some against lefties. And then the slider, he just throws to both. And the slider's become his primary pitch this year compared to last year, it being his secondary pitch. So he's become a three-pitch pitcher, which was a big deal. He has offerings for both. So he's learned like to throw some, you know, having two pitches for each side of the plate is always good. Do I think he's this good? Obviously not, but do I think he might be this year's Braxton Garrett type of guy where you just kind of look at him like, okay, he's going to eat innings, get me some ratios, and like he'll have the occasional start that was like, wow, how did he do that? But at the same time, he'll also have the occasional blow up, right? Yeah. So I don't know. I like what I see with Singer, but like he faces Houston this week, I think. So it's like, I'd go out and get him.
I was going to say, I'd be okay if you want to add him. I'd sit him versus Houston, but he's got the White Sox the next week. He's back in action.
And that's why it's important to look ahead and try to project forward with stuff like this, because guys like this, you'll see him dropped in 12s this week, I bet. Yep. If he goes out and gets hit four and runs over six innings or something stupid. And or if he has a six earned run, four inning outing, he'll get dropped. And maybe he's not quite Braxton Garrett this year, because I think Garrett was a guy that became a must start almost in 15s anyway. Yeah. I don't think Singer will quite get to that point, but maybe. But I think it's one of those things where everyone was a year early on Singer. I do think Singer can be serviceable for a good portion of the year if it's nothing more than, even if he is just a streamer. He pitches in that division that you want to attack. You know, he's gonna face Detroit, the White Sox, even the Guardians when they stop being pesky, because they're not gonna be this pesky all year. There's not. We know what the Guardians offense is. And it's one of those things where it's kind of the best of both worlds. You're seeing him take a step forward as a pitcher while also getting that division for probably half his starts or more. Yeah, there's no reason not to be optimistic about Brady Singer right now.
Yeah, no, that's kind of where I'm at on Brady Singer. Definitely not a must start every week, but might make that way there. Let's talk about Oliver Dunn at an 82 leagues, as high as 71, as low as a dollar. I know we were both in on Dunn. We'll talk about our bids later on him, but he's hit safely in 5 of 7 games. He let off on Sunday, which was a little new, but he's still playing a lot at third base. He's second base on NPC, so he'll gain third base. Hopefully this continues. That's one reason why I liked him. But he's hitting .318, a homer, 2 steals. He's showing a little bit of everything that's fun to watch. Regression, .429 BABIP, everyone will say is tough to continue with. But when you look at Oliver Dunn, what are you thinking here? Because like I said, we both kind of put our bids in on him.
Yeah, I was a little annoyed because he did steal another base. I think he has 2 on the year now. He stole another base while leading off, and he let off because Yelich was out. So I don't think leading off is going to be a thing for him. But the fact that he was batting fourth or fifth in lineup anyway yesterday. So I think Oliver Dunn's already kind of hitting his way up the lineup. We've seen the flashy tools in the minors. A 110 max EV so far this year shows you the power potential is there. It's not like he doesn't have power type of thing. But I don't know. There's a lot. The problem is he's still very much Oliver Dunn's still very much a platoon bat. So you have to understand, he hasn't started against lefties yet. And I don't know if the playing time is going to get there. Can it? Absolutely. This team won't necessarily stop him, but he hasn't started against lefties. Really solid approach. Doesn't chase much, hits the ball hard. Dunn is a guy that in the minors, I think we met power and speed there, but I'm trying to of course my internet took a crap on me, so I can't pull up his stats, but I know last I checked the strikeouts were kind of an issue with him, right? Like he's a strikeout
about 28% K rate right now.
Yeah, but my thing is the fact he's not chasing. So is it more so like a passivity K rate or is it a swing and miss K rate? Because he does whiff a lot. 13th percentile whiff rate. So that's bad. You want it to be like 93rd percentile, right? So there is swing and miss to his game, but he doesn't chase. So at least when he's being selective, he's swinging in the zone, but he's not making as much contact in the zone as you'd like. And that's what I'm getting. That's just what I'm getting from the sliders, because that's all I can see on him. I can't scroll down. It won't even reload the page for me right now. My internet's just lovely.
Well, then we'll try to do this one off the top of your head since we were talking about it earlier. The last guy I want to mention here, Blaze Alexander. And we were all over the boards on bids, and we'll talk about that again in a minute here. But Blaze was added in 78 leagues, as high as 133, as low as a dollar. Probably added in a few leagues last week as well. Maybe some are skeptical based on the bids we saw. So we'll have to wait and see there. He's hit safely in 4 of his 7 games. He's hitting .286, 1 homer, 1 steal, 30.4% K rate. But he should play every day at shortstop with Geraldo Perdomo going down for at least a month. So what are your thoughts on Mr. Blaze Alexander?
So I was optimistic enough to go out and get him. I would have had him in 2 spots, but I did learn that the hard way in NFBC leagues that you have to make sure you have a legal roster before you drop a player, right? Even though you have a legal roster after your moves are made. Has to be legal even after. It's weird. The NFBC, I didn't realize I knew that it makes sense, but I didn't, that's something I ever had to consider, I guess, in the past. But anyway, Blaze Alexander, I got a bunch of OC shares because, again, hard to transition my brain from 15 to 12 still, but so I overbid on him. He was my Blade. You know how, Blade last week kind of went a little crazy? It worked out. Blade had a good week, had a home run and everything. So I'm hoping that that's kind of hopefully if I overpay, at least it works out this week. 3 in cores, 2 lefties, I believe, in cores as well. So that's going to help him because he hits lefties better. But anyway, Blaze, path to consistent playing time, as you mentioned, is a big one. The 110 max exit velocity is kind of nice to see because it shows that there is power potential there. And the 42.9% hard hit rate so far, very, very encouraging. Another good thing is the zone contact, 91.2%. anything over 90% is pretty much elite. And so far, Blaze Alexander's been able to have really good zone recognition and obviously able to take advantage of it. Now, what's also encouraging is that this isn't just a flash. It's a flash in the pan, so to speak, but Blaze is also coming off of a strong spring. So you're taking the strong spring. He rolled it over, strong start, and you roll with it. I think it's a good way to go. But the ground ball rate is a concern. That was kind of like goes back to what I mentioned before with Kirilloff, that I think it was like 50-something%. And I understand that, you know, Blaze isn't slow, but you still want a guy to hit the ball in the air more. And so that way the power can play up. But I like the approach. I like, and that's why. So the strikeout rate was kind of more of a, you look at it and it was passivity more than it was swing and miss. He had better than league average. He didn't chase a whole lot. Alexander had better than league average swinging strike rates. And then that over 90% zone contact, that kind of that trio tells me, okay, he's passive more than swing and miss. Now there's going to be some swing and miss this game, I guess, as teams and whatnot learn to approach him differently. But yeah, right now I see some tools there. I like that approach early on. And I think Blaze Alexander is worth taking a shot on just for these things when you put them all together.
Yep. I'm 100% with you on that. All right, let's recap our fab pickups of the week, Mr. Kurland. If your computer, is your computer working again?
Yeah, I got it to work.
All right, I'll let you start with your go with your 15s. I'll do my 15s, then we'll go to 12s.
Okay, so I picked up the wrong. I pressed the wrong button. One second.
No problem.
Fab results. Okay, so in one main event, 6-5, I won Lamont Wade. He's my streaming corner infielder for the week. And he's always just solid. Like, I feel like there's a week he'll hit two home runs and then he'll hit like 250 with empty batting average the next week. So hopefully it's the two home run week. And I took a shot on Trevor Williams. I thought he was going to be 6-0. I didn't realize he'd be, I thought he'd be at least interesting. I'm going to hold my nose for the start. I needed to buy a 1 week rental and he's a two step at San Fran and at Oakland. The San Fran start really scares me. But he looked decent in his first outing, and I think in 15s he has some streamer appeal. I'm waiting. I can't wait till next week when I'm like, yeah, why did I even do this? But that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at with him.
In DFS, I recommended him as a value versus the Giants because the Giants is an improved offense, but still an offense that you're struggling to put it together. The early season stats show it, and just watching them, it's like pulling teeth to get runs scored.
But it's also the type of pitching staff or pitcher that can get going on.
That was why I said, and in DFS, let me clarify, he was $5,800. He's cheap as cheap can be. So it's if you're just looking to punt, then that's the Trevor Williams. But in a 15, like that's kind of the angles too.
Yeah, so it was more so a matchup play coming off a decent start. And it wasn't just a decent start. It was a decent start against the Pirates, who are running hot as can be right now.
Exactly.
So the fact that he was able to get by on them, I'm like, maybe he could pull out one of those weird little runs that we've seen from him in the past where he gets, like, you know, the mid-3s ERA, maybe even a low 4. Maybe he squeaks a win out because Washington's not great, but they can beat these teams between Oakland and San Fran. And I know San Fran's better than what they've been, but I don't know. So I took a shot there. That's, again, not really sexy or flashy. That's all I did one main. The other main, I got Blaze Alexander 43-18. I was surprised at the runner-up bids, especially because in main events in general, I'm going to pull him up real quick, Blaze. He went as low as 2 in a main, and he got added across the board, but 129 max, and most of the bids, 48, my $43 bid was like the 6th highest or 8th highest, something like that. That's wild to me. That's wild. Now most of the runner-ups were in the 20s and 30s, so it's like I didn't think I was far off, but I'm kind of surprised just because given 15 teamers, especially with the story injuries and all that
playing time.
But it is what it is. I'm annoyed because I also went for Oliver Dunn in this league, and Matty Modica took me out 45-43. I had the same bid on both. I really like Dunn and Blaze, and Dunn got the hype, and Modica took me out $2. What a great bid for him! I'm not happy about it.
Leadoff Sunday got Dunn's attention.
Yeah, I know. Modica is one of those guys that probably had Dunn on his. He's probably one of those guys that just like me had Dunn on his waterfall and upped him after the stolen base and after the leadoff because you're like, you know, you have to get him. You know what I mean? Like if he went out there and went over 4-3 Ks, you probably could have gotten for $20. But when he went out there, had a decent game, stole base, you're not getting him for $20 anymore. But yeah, that's another one. And Garrett Mitchell, I went out and stashed him $6. So there was a report that his everything's healing as expected. He could be back by late April, early May. And I'm in a position to stash in this league. So I went out and just got him because he was there in a 15 and a 12. I don't think he was kind of like a fringe stash because it's still a shorter. I like short-term stashes like this. And for $6, I could drop him next week if I really need to. And then I dropped Lawrence Butler, added Jake Myers. I know Jake Myers is kind of the guy that's been playing 4 out of 6. He just played 4 out of 6 last week. But in his limited, even in that role, he's still producing. And they have 7 games this week. So if I get 5 starts out of him in that lineup, I'm okay. He's just a streamer for the week anyway in this league. So that's what those are my 15s. Oh, yeah. Did I get more? Oh, no. I got him. Wait, I have more 15s. I lied. And I have my Olak. That's kind of a big deal. Chad Green, 7-5. Reese McGuire, 7 unopposed. I just need a second catcher while I'm waiting for what's his face to come back. From
Jordan Romano.
No, not Romano. No, not Chad. Chad Green was just I need saves there. I don't have a second closer, so I took a shot and $7 for a week and a half. That's fine. But Reese McGuire is covering for I wonder what his role is going to be over there in Toronto. Can't think of his name. Toronto, wrist guy, always broken.
Danny Jansen.
Yeah, thank you. never, always broken, never healthy. I stashed.
You said Reese McGuire. Reese McGuire's in Boston.
Well, I picked up Reese McGuire to cover for him for the.
Gotcha.
That's what that was. But the thing is I'm wondering now if Reese McGuire is going to stay my regular because I don't know with how good, because I think Kirk's off to a decent start. I don't know if Kirk, I got to look it up. If Kirk, how much playing time it is. I thought he was off to a decent start. I could be wrong. I've been meaning to look into him. No, he's off to an awful start. We're good. Jansen should get his drop back. but yeah, so Reese McGuire was just that $7 little pickup right there. So those are my 15s, I think. Because yeah, I got, those are the bigger money ones anyway.
All right, to my fab in my Olak 15, Blaze Alexander dropped Aaron Hicks 18-16. That was awfully kind, and I appreciated it. And then I added Miguel Amaya, dropped Yan Gomes 1-2 unattested because I was changing up the catcher's situation there. And then my only other 15, I'm not going to recap the listener leagues, but the 125, my main event qualifier, that's a fun one. Oliver Dunn, I added for $14, dropped Elias Montero. Runner-up of 6. I added Tyler Anderson for his 2-step this week. I'm kind of a little more optimistic than Trevor Williams, but still scared. It's got Tampa Bay and at Boston, but it's one of those. He looked a lot more like 2022 Tyler Anderson than 2023. I know it's one start, but it's one of those I want to get ahead of the curve on this one possibly. Dropped Tyler McGill, 9-3. Added Kyle Isbell, dropped Aaron Hicks, 5-4. Added Ryan Yarbrough, dropped Keaton Wynn 5-0. Yarbrough is going to get out there at least once a week, if not twice. So I'm a big fan of that scenario. All right, 12s, Curlin. What damage did you do?
So Blaze Alexander, 33-1. I told you, man.
Oh, it's okay, man. We're going to have some fun with this conversation in a minute.
Well, because Ronel Blanco was actually great bid in this league, 95-88 for someone else. Like, that was a perfect. Like, Brady Singer, 50-26. I understood that. But I got Oliver Dunn here because I actually needed offense. And Oliver Dunn in a 12 is a little more fringe, obviously, but 8-4. So look, I did that one right. I did that one right. I think I went around and I edited all my bids except for the OCs at the end of the day. And then Chris Martin 2-0 just to chase saves / get a guy that's going to give me innings this week while I wait for some health. Next one, this was my Trevor Story team where I dropped Story for Alexander 33-0 no runner up bid. So I was 33 was my number in OCs, obviously. And but then I see Oswaldo Cabrera went 131-7 in this league. So that's why I'm like, that's where I get aggravated. Like you try to meet in the middle here. Like, okay, Alexander, I'd rather have Alexander this week than Cabrera, I feel like, at least this week. And but then not for that price difference, right? So it's like, oh, like I would never touch that price. But then like guys, really good players went for like 7, 6, 5. I'm like, all right, cool. It's a reminder. There's players up down here I would recommend. It's just one of those things. Oh, Graham Ashcraft in this league, 11-2. I dropped Griffin Canning, just like you did. See, I'm like you.
Yep.
That hurt because you know I have a lot of
Canning. Oh, I'm a big Canning guy too, but in a 12, like he's a guy you can go back and forth with.
And then Spencer Turnbull, my other OC, 11 unopposed, and Blaze Alexander, 34-11. This is the only one I was opposed with like a double digit bid. Thank God, makes me feel a little better. But yeah, but then Jose Caballero, 111-4. Like that's where I get frustrated. Like I don't see that much of a difference in taking a shot in a 12 on Alexander over like for 3 times the price. Make that that's where I get like okay. So I don't feel bad about my bids when I see guys that I view similarly going for so much more. But still, OCs are aggravating, and I should be keeping most of my bids down like 10-15 bucks at most, and then only splashing big when a player like Ronel Blanco went for 223 in this league with a runner up of 101. But I can understand at least go. I can at least understand that move because he's a potential difference maker in a 12, at least viewed that way.
Yeah, but, I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, those are my three OCs and a bunch of like just 2 to 3 ads. Not a whole lot turning over this week.
Yeah, I did a bunch of 2 to 3s, and we're gonna, like my first OC, Blaze Alexander, dropped Kyle Gibson 16-1. So even there, I could have gone even lower than 16. And I did Kirilov drop Matt Wallner 7-6. That was actually close, thank God. My second OC, I know you're not a Kirilov guy, but let's move on. So this is the OC where I dropped Justin Turner last week for Kyle Gibson, and it sucked because Kyle Gibson did great in the hard start and got just shelled by the Marlins. It was so tilting, but that's streaming. It's 2-star guys. I got Justin Turner back 44-27, so I'll have him for now. Then I added Kirilov 8-1, and I dropped Michael Kopech, Curlin, as a few reasons. Like, I like Kopech. This is nothing against you, but the ratio is just, he's going to destroy whip, it feels like, and how many saves are you really going to get at that point? So how often do I start him? Plus, in this league, I had 3 closers. I don't need a 4th, so Kopech is gone, and it just...
I get that. I actually almost dropped him in an OC where I didn't need saves either. So, or maybe I don't know if I did. I should have looked. I wasn't really
just, like, the strikeout upside with the potential save, the ratios he's destroying you. Like that whip, it's so not going to get any better.
From batter to batter, he looks like he's in control to completely just guessing and throwing.
Yep.
It's really wild to see how he can go from being like the most dominant reliever to like, I don't know where the ball is going to go, but it's going to be really hard.
Yep. And then in my final OC, I added Blaze Alexander. So I got them all 3. Dropped Carey Carpenter 21-0 unopposed. And then I did Nolan Schnall. I think I always pronounce it. Dropped Kyle Gibson 4-0. It's 7 righties for the Angels. And I know he's only hitting .091, but he's better than that. He's hitting 2nd. And I'll take my upside with Nolan in the weekly matchups that he has coming up. All right, let's do some – before we go to the listener questions, you had a little Lubob update. I pulled it up as well. They're reporting he's going to miss 6 to 8 weeks with his hip flexor, but also in this quote I'm reading, it seems like the White Sox timeline is not as pessimistic as Nightingale suggested. Given the updated timeline, Fangio managers should try to keep Robert on their roster. But they're saying there's no certainty that Robert will be back within the 8 weeks. So – pick your poison. I'm on the pessimistic side. I think it's going to be longer, personally. But
but here's the thing: we're still talking about a guy that. Let's see. Okay, so what would 10 weeks do? 10 weeks would be 2.5 months. That brings you to about what? End of June.
We get probably. Let's just say All-Star break.
You're still getting what 2.5 months of yeah. Robert. That's tough. I still think he's a difference maker. He's a guy that if you want, like if you're like now, at least this would have been like, all right, I'll hold for another couple of weeks, see if we get another update. And if it's pushed back, then I drop. I think that's where my mindset would have shifted. And maybe I'm wrong for that mindset, but he's just such a difference maker when he's on the field that you don't like, you drop him and it's not the wrong move. But if you don't stream or find the next guy to take his place and someone else grabs him and that's the reason why you like someone else wins the league, it's frustrating. I don't know. I know I'm not cutthroat enough with certain guys, but man, 6 to 8, like if it's truly close to 6 to 8 weeks.
I get it. Oof. But it's the whole like, yes, in IL leagues, yes, you're keeping him, but in FEC leagues where you can't.
I know.
He could be your only stash, and that's where it gets complicated. Because like, what if you're holding on to, say you're in a 15 and you're holding on to Jameson Taillon, who's coming back soon, and you have
– drop Taillon.
But okay, so you got him gone. What about Kyle Bradish, who people are expecting back mid-May? Like you start adding these kind of names up and it gets like Gilds put out a funny tweet because his whole bench, because he stashes guys, but now with the last week's injuries, his whole bench was IL.
Yeah, I stashed guys. So I went one of my mains, I took the approach of I'm stashing every short term IL guy. So JDM was like he fell in that draft. Lars fell to the reserve rounds in a 15. I was like, sweet, I'll take that. Braxton Garrett and Taillon. I have all 4 of them. And I think I added Friedel. Because someone dropped him. So it was risky and it worked out up until Jung got injured. But even then, JDM should be back by this week or end of this week or early next week, in theory. Lars should be back today. Braxton Garrett already threw a 4.1 inning. And so did Taillon through a rehab. Both those guys could be back next week or the following week. So it's one of those things where I was okay. It's a little different, those guys, but Tyone isn't on the same. Like, I don't know why stashing him might have been pointless. We'll see, because I think he could have some bench streamer appeal when he's back. I really like him. But at the end of the day, yeah, that's the, I took that approach in that main. And the thing is that main is fine in hitting. I just need pitching. So if Braxton can be even 2/3 of what he was, he's very serviceable. And if Tyone could be anything like we saw in the second half, those stashes are going to pay off, because there hasn't been nothing. And it hasn't stopped me from going after and turning and burning players, at least early on.
But then my question there is, so when those guys come back, okay, that's great. So now you say you can stash Robert. Who are you dropping?
I would drop Young all day. I would drop him because I still have Young on that team too. I tried dropping Young on that team. It just didn't work out because I didn't understand.
Yeah, explain the new rule that you learned at the NFBC this weekend when you're doing Fab.
It made sense once I looked at it, but I was like, I saw the $30 win on Blaze Alexander in my league. I was like, wait a minute, I know I bid more because I knew I had 43 was my number for him in mains, right? That was the number I had, 43 or 44 or something like that. I look and I'm like, okay, I didn't get him. It said something about the roster not being right. So because I was stashing these guys, I kind of played shorthand, and I would say I took a zero all week at a corner, but I didn't, because Young had such a good start to the week that honestly, probably better that I didn't have somebody come in and screw it up and give me like an O for the rest of the week. But that's just me being optimistic. So I ended up just having to deal with him in my starting lineup the whole week. Home run, stolen base, 4 RBIs. I wasn't mad. It worked out. I got lucky. But because he was the only corner infielder going into Fab, I didn't drop him for corner infielders. Stashing him was the backup option if I didn't win Blaze or Dunn. Those were the only two guys I thought were good enough to warrant dropping Young this week. That in my brain, that's how it worked out. But it would have worked out just fine, because I would have got one of my guys I thought were worth it. But the problem was because he was my only active corner, when I went to run, because it was my highest bid and the first to process, they didn't process it because it would have made my lineup illegal. And it doesn't matter if you got, like, I ended up getting a corner infielder with one of my lesser bids. One of the like second or third waterfalls down was when I got my corner infielder. But because that would have been the first action, and that initial action would have made my lineup illegal for that, even for a brief moment, it denied it from happening. So at the end of the day, if I wanted to drop, people are like, well, why didn't you just drop him for your CI? Because I didn't want to drop him if I didn't get these certain players, and these certain players just happen to not have CI. But now I know I can't do that. I have to take my chance that I'm going to get now in the future. If I want to make sure I would have got one of these guys. I dropped Young for one of the CIs I was going to get. Cause I had like a 10 name CI bid list. Like, I was getting a CI. There was no taking a zero. I was getting one. It didn't matter if they were a short time platoon guy. Like, I was getting one, you know what I mean? But it didn't matter. It didn't matter because it wasn't my first priority. And it didn't fill the spot before Young's name came around to fill the up to get those other guys. So make sure that if you have a guy in your set that you're dropping in your lineup and you have no one on your bench to fill, either move him to your bench if you can first, or drop that person for that position. Otherwise, you can miss your bid like I did.
Yeah, no, it's definitely good to know.
Which is weird because no one's ever, like, that's something you would think somebody would be like, hey, by the way, this is not that it's a real big surprise, but just a small little quirk you might not know about. This doesn't matter if you're getting a CI. If you don't have a CI on your active roster, it won't process your bid. Like, oh, cool, thanks.
Yep, no, it's definitely good to know. Let's do a couple listener questions before we head on out of here. Our buddy Anthony Gialdi, he says, who are your favorite closer specs to stash right now, assuming they are owned in your leagues and you can safely say their names? Like, I've been a Mr. James MacArthur guy forever. He should be slowly getting ramped up. Daniel Robertson's almost gone everywhere like he should be. Those would be my main two guys, but I know there's more out there. Who else are you targeting?
I still like Jeff Hoffman. I know he hasn't been the – I know it's been just what's his face getting it all, but I still have a belief in Hoffman for some reason. Yep. As a guy like Chris Martin, he's still sitting around. I saw him dropped in a few spots. Mm-hmm. Even in mains, I think I dropped in my main, and he's a guy that – obviously, if Kenley is sore or something, I feel like he's the next guy up. But also, what's the other guy they have? The other reliever that's been really good. Schreiber or something like that. Yeah. I have to look it up. But he's another guy that, like, if you're looking beyond Martin, because Martin, say he fails or something, I'm going to get the name for you right now. Justin Slayton. He's been
Schreiber's really Kansas City.
What?
Schreiber's Kansas City.
Yeah, that's where I'm like Schreiber. Schreiber's another one that, I mean, if you don't trust MacArthur to hold it, I think Schreiber might be the next guy. And then you have Nick Anderson over there also. So it's like, but I think Chris Martin for me, and I still like Jeff Hoffman. And what's Bender in Miami? That's another one. Because not that Miami's winning any games right now.
But Tanner Scott's been bad.
We've seen Scott. Yeah, Scott. Not only has he been bad, but he's been working weird innings lately. Almost like, and I think he'll get the job back type of thing. But if you're looking for a guy that could just take it and run with it, I guess Bender or Sixto even. But
one guy I wrote up this week, especially in deeper formats, is also Shelby Miller in Detroit. He's kind of like a Daniel Hudson type. But if anything were to ever happen to Jason Foley, I think Miller's actually the guy that gets most of it. He didn't get that one Lang was there because he got the day off. But Miller's got a couple wins. He's getting some high leverage spots. So he'd be a guy to keep an eye on too.
Jason Adam in Tampa.
Yep. All right. Let's talk about another one here. Ibex turnover at Sleepy Gator says, do you feel any differently about Colin Ray after two starts? Ray went into the Queens, five innings, one earned two Ks. At home against Seattle, six innings, one earned three Ks. No, I'm just not a Colin Ray guy, but maybe I should be. He just doesn't strike anybody out, so that's like off my my agenda.
Yeah, he's overperforming right now by a large margin. Not even getting ground balls, not striking people out. Colin Ray is very much that streamer. You ride it while it's working out, but I mean, 10% strikeout rate, 6.4% K minus walk. Like that's
not going to do bad. It.
Dude. And I understand it doesn't mean everything. Like, 1.64 ERA. That's the production you got. Great, but other than FIP being 2.82, everything else is four and fives. Like, and so again, small sample, so all these underlying metrics are usually a little inflated or a little off. But I tend to believe the fours and fives, given what we're seeing in the skill set and approach right now. With that said, I know he was mildly interesting. I think Pollock talked him up a little bit in the offseason, not as anything special, but as like a hey, this guy could be at least a Toby-ish, right? Like, I guess that would be his way of. I don't think he says Toby-ish. I say ish, but I think it'd be one of those things where that's the only person I heard remember hearing talk him up at all. And even then it was like, hey, don't get excited, but this guy could be something and helpful at times. So yeah, Colin Ray, that's kind of how I view him. He's right. He's like a Kyle Gibson type where at his best, he's giving you potential for wins and innings with some ratios. But when he blows up, it'll be like a six earned run outing in four innings and you're going to hate it. So be careful.
Yep, makes sense. Last question we got here is from Buncha Funcha. Jose Siri has a 15% walk rate. Is this a fluke, or has he made legit changes that could make him a top 100 fantasy hitter? Well, he's also striking out 35% of the time, but he does have the six steals and a home run. The walk rate increase, I think, is very, very nice. I'm still playing him. He's hitting 250, but just know he's on the edge of going a bad direction quickly too.
Yeah, he hasn't even gotten into the power yet, and he's a 50% ground ball rate is very uncharacteristic. We're talking about a career 40% guy. So once we see Siri start elevating the ball more, we'll see some of those balls clear the fence because we know the power is legit. I think it's the batting average is going to diminish. It's almost going to be Anthony Volpe-esque, I think, at the end of the year, where we see the batting average is going to be closer to the 230 mark, but he's going to give you the 20-20 or the 25-30. He might be 20. He's already at six. It's probably going to be 20-30, 25-30 at this rate. And Siri hit 25 home runs last year in just 101 games. So if he stays healthy, we're looking at, what, 130-ish in games, give or take his days off and platoons and all that, 130, 135. He could go 30-30, but hit 220. Like the way he's hitting, he could end up being that weird, like, very useful guy. I mean, he's 6-for-7, too. And that was the thing. Siri went in the spring wanting to steal more bases. He's doing it and he's being efficient. So as long as he's efficient, I think Siri's going to run as much as he wants. I wish I could use those stolen bases right now.
Yeah, Anthony Volpe comp's a good comp.
That's the stat line that came to mind. Like the thing is, though, is I think there's more power there.
Yeah,
for Siri, but he also has to hit the ball more.
In the air. So,
yeah, well, it's a fun profile, but it's definitely something like he can drag your batting average by himself. So you really have to be mindful.
Very careful. Very careful with Jose Siri. But we're going to wrap it up there, Mr. Kirtlin. Any final thoughts before we head on out? Another week of baseball action, hits, starts. We're recorded early on Monday, so we have games starting in a few hours.
Yeah, got to start setting lineups soon once we get real lineups popping up. But yeah, man, no, it's been fun. I really enjoyed it. Even like my teams are up and down right now, but it's so early. It's nice to have baseball back. I'm trying to take a better approach. I'm trying to be more just like enjoy it for what it is. But, you know, there's just some nights where it's like, man, everything went wrong. Pitching, hitting, like you just need to walk away from your computer. It's, we have 6 more months of this or 5.5 more months of this. So
yeah,
that's kind of the big takeaway.
Balances out, we'll be good.
You just have to remember, hey, first off, it's just a game, right? But we just care. We're so passionate about it. But it's just one of those things where take care of yourself. It's a long year. And that's kind of my big takeaway is like pace. You got to pace yourself because so much is going to change over the next few weeks, good or bad for a lot of teams.
It's a great point. Good advice from Mr. Curlin, the king. We'll end it on that note. Make sure y'all check out Mike over on Twitter at Mike_Curlin. His work at MLBPlainTime.com. Don't want to miss all that stuff. I am on Twitter at BDIntric. Go check me out over there. And this was Bench with Bubba, episode 665. Catch y'all next time.